Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the live half draft. We're live recording the second half of the draft. So whatever the hell you want to call that, that's what Mike and I are doing. Because we don't care about the first half of the draft because we got no picks. Were you hoping that we get a pick somehow? Did you think there was any real chance of moving into the first round?
No. I mean, after they made the trade with Frazier, I didn't really see it. Like I said, I thought the only way they get in the first round is if they traded a future first for a couple of picks, and they already had two. So, no, I didn't see it. But I honestly don't know, you know, who I would have loved if I could have gotten up there. Like the last guy in the first round that I really, really liked was all the way up at 11 and Malik Monk. So I wouldn't have really cared to get up there.
Yeah. So I was the thought that ran through my head after, you know, the first eight or nine is I don't give a crap about most of these guys. And either if Malik Monk slides to like 15, then Dell better be working some phones. But that's about it. Like, I couldn't think of anybody else who had a potential to slide. And I could care less about Zach Collins. I could care less about most of the bigs in this thing. And it feels like there's a lot of big players that are going. Like, how many really good guards? Derek White in the second half of this draft?
Well, Ryan, I got to cut you off because the Pelicans have already made a pick. Spoiled our live draft podcast.
What?
Yep, the first pick of the second round, the Pelicans trade up and get Duke's Frank Johnson. Oh, look, I threw you through a loop.
Yeah, you did.
They haven't announced what the trade is yet. I doubt 40 and 52 could get you all the way up there. But this is exactly, and this is what I've been saying, the Pelicans are going to do over and over again, is they trade their first-round picks. And then they take a guy in the second round that's a project that they essentially will sell as their first-round pick the next year and keep rolling it over. Frank Johnson was a freshman this year, played for Duke, was a guy who actually went to Lone Peak. I don't think he'll mind me revealing this, was actually a guy that Dell asked me if I had seen live about 2 years ago when I talked to him, so it's kind of funny. I know for a fact that Dell has been watching this guy for a couple of years, but was a highly recruited guy. Obviously, Duke is always in win-now mode, He got decent minutes, about 25 a game last year. Showed he could hit the three. He's, I would say, way more of a combo guard than a point guard. But he's a guy that if you looked at draft, you know, at mock drafts probably before the year started, he would have been a higher pick, and just other guys jumped him because he didn't have as much chance to shine at Duke because of all the other guys that they have. But Frank Jackson, what are your initial thoughts?
Honestly, wow, I have a stupid ad popping up on my computer and distracting me. I'll be honest, like, I looked at Frank Jackson, and he didn't even make my list of people that I thought they would even consider taking. Wow, I'm actually kind of a little surprised that they moved up that quickly. I wasn't prepared for this. I was all ready to talk about Tim Frazier and how important he is to the team, and now I'm talking about Frank Jackson. So
I mean, they traded 40 in cash, so they still have 52, so we could still be excited about 52, but this is, like I said, I want people to see the bigger picture first, and I'm a little flustered because I'm thinking back to the conversation, and Dell knew that I coached in Utah, and literally the first question he asked me is what kind of defense we played. The second question he asked me is if we played against Frank Jackson. So this is this is kind of bringing me back, trying to remember, but it just shows that Dell has been putting in his homework for quite a while. But anyway, they pretty much know they are not going to have first round picks probably ever as long as Dell Demps is in office. But with Diallo last year, they traded up, got him at the beginning of the second round, developed him, and now this year he's probably going to get the kind of rotation minutes a first rounder gets, you know, be the ninth, tenth man, whatever, and they think he has first round talent. Just with that philosophy in mind, in theory, what do you think of that philosophy?
So I was actually going to bring up, there's two things that you've basically been saying all along, is that they're going to go for two guys, one a guy who can maybe come in and help a little more settled, and one who's the project. So this is clearly the project. And so apparently he's had a foot injury. Is it something that he had and then came back from, or is he currently out with the foot injury?
I guess, long story short, I don't know if he'll play in Summer League. I don't know if that matters, but
of course
I don't.
It matters. Summer League is the best.
But I don't think that there's any chance, that he misses any time. I mean, just an athletic, and again, this is the high upside, like Diallo, first overall in the shuttle, which again shows a lot about athleticism and kind of lateral mobility. Second overall in max vert, 42 inches. Fifth overall in three-quarter sprint, which some people actually like a little better to show defensive potential. But anyway, just an athletic guy who, like I said, I think a lot of people would have guessed would have been a higher pick this time last year. Didn't really have the ball in his hands as much, or wasn't looked for. He was probably a fifth option at Duke, maybe sixth. But, I mean, there were games and big spotlight games where he took over. But you're talking about a guy, I mean, you want to talk about being in love with three-point rate. This guy took 4.2 shots per game. 3.6 were from the he took 4.2 twos a game and 3.6 from three. So, I mean, almost a 50% three-point rate. Good free throw shooter, so the shooting should translate. I just wouldn't expect more, a point guard. I would expect more of a combo guard. But honestly, with them wanting to make, Boogie more of a focus of the playmaking, I don't know if you need a true point anyway. So a lot of these make sense. A lot of this helps it make sense when you kind of think about what the Pels are looking for.
Well, and, Alvin Gentry has said over and over again, number one thing he needs is shooting right now. And this is a guy who took a not a huge number, but a pretty high number of 3 points for the 25 minutes he was playing. And he shot 40%, essentially. So that right there, his free throw percentage is 76%. And when you're talking about being able to predict whether a player is going to be able to continue to shoot fairly well, free throw percentage can mean a lot. And a 76% is perfectly satisfactory. So everything shows that he should be pretty solid there. And I'm really shocked that you were going through all those stats and how quick he moves and everything, and you didn't even bring up his wingspan.
That's because I don't want to take another shot because Jay Billis is
God.
He's got that corner.
He just needs to shut up.
Billis.
Yeah. So everybody, he has a 6 foot 7.5 inch wingspan, and he's only 6'2" without shoes, which means he's slightly above average.
Yeah. I mean, he has the athletic markers. Honestly, there's a lot of Drew here. You know, defensive potential, move, good enough shooter. I think he's a better shooter than Drew was at this point. As you guys hear all these dings, these are I got to figure out how to shut this off, but these are just the Bourbon Street Shot emails coming in of everybody else trying to put it together and process it. But yeah, good enough shot, or actually very good shot at this stage in his career. It's just going to be a matter of, again, what he does off the ball, figuring out a move, how to finish at the rim, which he's actually pretty good at, one of the better guards in this league. So I often say that, you know, people talk too much about, oh, this guy's good or that guy's bad, or, you know, this is a good pick or whatever. It really depends, especially when you get away from the elite talent, where a guy goes. I'll say if the Pelicans commit to this system that Chris Fitch is running and, you know, where their guards play more off the ball, cut, shoot, play off the big man, you know, Frank Jackson, if I was his agent, this would almost be a perfect fit, again, if you could kind of guarantee me that this coaching staff is here for a couple more years and Boogie is here, whatever. We can't guarantee that, but if they are and they've got to kind of, you know, Dell's got a draft as if they plan to be, you know, if I was Frank Jackson's agent, I would be very happy because this is the exact type of team and system that he could flourish in.
So is Frank Jackson the heir apparent to Michael Jordan Crawford?
Oof.
I know, I'm not saying a lot. He could be the next Michael Jordan Crawford.
Yeah, I think he's a couple of years away. Like I said, I think you know, he could dream and be like Mike someday. But I really think, again, I think Pelicans fans got to look at this as he is a guy that they are drafting with an idea that he's their 2018 first round pick. Because I'm telling you, that pick is getting traded, so they won't have it anyway. So don't think of Frank Jackson as your 2017 second rounder. Think of him as your 2018 first rounder.
And he is exactly 19.1 years old. So what does 0.1 mean? Is that like, it's 12 months. Does that make him 1.2 months old? 19 so, and 1, it doesn't matter. This is stupid.
So well, this goes to a greater philosophical question I've always wondered. So let's say that the world just, you know, whatever, goes down the tubes, and basically we start next year, and kind of how we have an A, D, B, C, so we have something else. Let's say we have post-apocalypse, so it goes from B, C, A, D, and then now it's post-apocalypse, so it's B, A. What year is it? If, let's say, that happens today, and then what year post-apocalypse is it? Is it year zero or year one? Year that you write down. Let's say you're January 3rd, comma, what year?
Somehow I suspect that if you're living through the apocalypse, you're not writing down the year. it's kind of a historical thing. Like 200 years later, people come back and say, "This is the day that Michael McNamara, the great leader who came out of Utah after the apocalypse. This is the first writings of Michael McNamara.
Oh, those would be some hot fire right there. But you're not going to, but I mean, when historians look back, would they say that it was the year zero or the year one?
I think it'd be the year one. It'd be the year one of I don't know, I guess after apocalypse, AA. I don't, whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would be curious to hear from some other people what they think, but. Anyway,
well, you know that there's an entire thing out there with BCE instead of BC because of that very reason. There's not really a year zero, and there needs, so you have to figure that in when you're calculating years. And there's an entire discussion about that by historians. And now you're having advertisements. You must have something really exciting happening.
No, I was watching the Frank Jackson Draft Express. Yeah. Little video, seeing if there's anything I missed. But
I suspect that there's probably a lot of people who are right now looking at the Frank Jackson Draft Express that follow us. So
yeah, I really thought it was going to be the other way around. I thought at 40 they were going to take the guy who could possibly be a rotation player this year, and then at 52 they were going to kind of take a developmental guy. I was thinking somebody like Kobe Simmons out of Arizona, who's another guy who fits this exact Frank Jackson profile of, if you would have went back 12 months ago, they would have told you that Kobe Simmons would have been a surefire first-round pick in this draft, and now he's a guy who might not even be drafted. But regardless, this is what the Pelicans want to do, is they want to take guys in the second round that'll be first-round picks.
Right.
In their eyes, the next year.
Well,
so
let's do this though. You had a list of guys you ranked as the top people that you wanted in the second round. Frank Jackson was not on that list, if I remember right. You had your boy Wesley on there, and he was just taken 33. So Wesley was a window was available. I have to say a window because I won't be able to say it later. Does that upset you, or does it not really matter as much to you?
I don't think anything really upsets me at this point that has to deal with professional basketball players. But as far as what I would do, no, I wouldn't have done this just because I look back at history, and when you look at the guys, and it's usually between pick 31 and 40, when you look at the guys who vastly exceed where they were drafted, they're almost always upperclassmen because, frankly, if a freshman was that good and they still had all that potential, they would have just been taken earlier. So history says that, you're not going to find a gem as a freshman in the first round. That's not something that is undervalued by other teams, so you're not going to get lucky. But, maybe if there is a clear plan to develop and bring along slowly, I mean, Diallo looks good, so he might buck that trend, and they're trying again with Frank Jackson. But no, I would have went for what is traditionally undervalued, and that's upperclassmen who, yes, are closer to their ceiling but are actually good players. I would have went for an Awundu. I would have went for a Jordan Bell, somebody like that. But the Pelicans have a plan, and I think at least in theory, it's a smart plan. They're basically taking guys at the beginning of the second round who they think, if they developed, would be a mid-first rounder the next year. In theory, it's a good plan. You just got to identify and then, more importantly, develop the guys properly.
Right. So if you were Ivan Rabb, how upset would you be by the fact that last year you were a potential lottery pick and this year you were just picked 35th?
I think he's lucky to have been picked 35th. Like, I really think in this NBA, I'm sitting there watching the first round and I just see center after big men go off the board. And I'm just wondering if we're all watching the same game here. Like, I'm not saying big men are completely worthless, but to me, if I was drafting for all 30 teams, there would have been probably 26 perimeter players taken in the top 30.
I don't know. I've been reading your Twitter feed. You're pretty much saying big men are worthless. You're saying stuff like, put the exact same team around James Harden as you put around Anthony Davis, and Harden wins 10 more games.
Oh, definitely, yeah. There goes another guy of mine off the board, Jonah Bolden at 36. I mean, what this shows is that the Pelicans definitely had to trade up. A lot of the guys that I think have potential going off the board. But, yeah, look at, and this brings me back to Boogie, which I think is interesting, is you look at what these big men are being traded for. So even good ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we can make fun of Dwight Howard all we want, but he is still good. I mean, he's putting up a double-double, rebounds the hell out of the ball, and he gets traded for a box of peanuts. You know, the Raptors are trying to give away Jonas Valanciunas, who's a good big. Like, look on the market and what bigs are valued for. So why would you use an asset on a big when literally any time you want, you could go get a good big, and sometimes the team will even pay you to take them off your hand, out their hand. So I just don't know why you would ever use an asset on a big. They're, you know, it makes no sense to me, but I guess people still fall in love.
I mean, the Lakers just traded the former second pick of the first round just to get Brook Lopez, because that's what that entire trade was all about, getting Brook Lopez.
No, it's getting out of Mozgov's salary, but yeah. But that, I mean, that brings me to the point, like, what in the world were the Lakers thinking that they, I mean, like, you don't need to pay bigs unless they're elite. Anthony Davis and Cousins I would pay, but you don't need to pay bigs, and you don't need to you don't need to draft them high in the first round. So I guess I just don't get it.
Well, I actually think Brook Lopez is a great idea for them. Personally, I know a lot of people won't think so, but like they have nobody to space the floor on that team now that Lou Williams is gone, and I guess maybe Swaggy comes back, but Brook Lopez can shoot threes.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going to move him for assets at some point, but yeah, I mean, either way, I guess what I'm saying is I don't get why there were so many taken, but I see the potential with this pick, and I get what they're trying to do. And even to your question about the injury, I mean, he should be fine by July, definitely be fine by camp. But even if not, like I said, if you're thinking of him as your first round pick next year, you got plenty of time to let him come along. You know, he's a guy who definitely has the pedigree. It's just going to be about refining his game and putting him in the right system. What wouldn't be good is if essentially everything went wrong, the Pelicans had to blow it up, and now, you know, DeMarcus Cousins leaves, and now you're going to try to take Frank Jackson and put him in a role as a playmaker, or, you know, put him in a traditional offense. He's definitely a guy that you would want to put with Boogie at the top of the key and Frank Jackson just kind of running off of picks and getting to the basket off cuts and things like that. So,
All right, I got my ultimate test for you.
Okay.
And part of it's because we know how this guy turned out a lot more. But you walk into an alternate universe, and there's been some weird time warp, and you can now make a pick for the Pelicans, and you could choose between rookie Austin Rivers and rookie Frank Jackson. Who do you pick, and do you even hesitate?
I would have thought Rivers was the better prospect at the time. However, I think now more than ever, shooting is the great equalizer, and it's the number one thing you have to look at. And Frank Jackson is definitely a better shooter and has better shooting potential to continue to grow and really be a knockdown guy. So in today's NBA, Frank Jackson without a doubt, but I'm not going to lie, I would have probably had Rivers as a higher prospect at the time, but just because I will admit I didn't see where the game was going and that everybody would be shooting 53s by the year 2019.
Yeah. I think you're not the only one.
Yes.
So the other big story that's going on right now, the big thing that happened in this draft, or like kind of right before the draft, Tim Frazier was traded. So, is there any way we could replace Tim Frazier?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny to see some of the reaction to the trade. It's always funny to see the immediate. I think the first thing people have to know is that it wasn't, I mean, the Pelicans didn't care about the 52nd pick. That's not what they traded Tim Frazier for, even though that's what they traded him for. They traded him for the flexibility to be able to operate over under the cap this year. And if you don't think that Dell could go get another Tim Frazier anytime he wants, I mean, he went and got Quinn Cook, who they like better than Tim Frazier anyway, and Michael Jordan Crawford just off the scrap heap. You could get those guys anytime. There's no reason that you need to take up $2 million on your roster when you're thinking about maybe operating under the cap this summer if things break a certain way. So I was not shocked at all. I thought, you know, it was great that they got something for him. The 52nd pick, we'll see who that is, or if they sell that to recoup some of the cash, whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, I was actually more surprised that Washington was like, yeah, we want this guy, because I don't see him as a rotation player in a playoff team.
So here's what I'd say about why I think Washington wants him. I think Washington knows that they have no flexibility. They know they're going to be breaking the bank because of Otto Porter's extension. They know they're not getting off of Jan Mahinmi's gigantic salary. That's a big weight off. So they needed a point guard that they could go out and expect to play cover a little bit better than Trey Burke. How's that for something fun, that Tim Frazier is a better player than Trey Burke? I think that's like a really unexpected development in my world. So they basically looked around, and we were offering Tim Frazier out there, and they said, well, this guy's he has proven he's not a disaster as a backup point guard, and it's $2 million, and we're locked into that. We know we're not going to have to pay, you know, use most of our mid-level exception to go find a decent backup point guard. Let's just go ahead and get Tim Frazier then. And for the Pelicans, like Tim Frazier, it's $2 million, and it does actually matter in the long run to the cap. So as much as I love Tim Frazier, we have much cheaper options available, and, you know, I'll be sad to see him playing in Washington. But I guess he's close to me now since I'm in Richmond, so I can just drive up and watch Tim Frazier to my heart's content.
Yeah, you guys could sit and watch the games together. He ain't going to be playing. I don't look at it as 52. If the Pelicans somehow by miracle get some kind of player at 52 that helps, that's gravy. But really it was for the, you know, 52, you don't have to have a guaranteed contract. So it was really to get that contract off the books, just to set people's expectations for whoever number 52 is. The best number 52 of all time is Rasul Butler.
Hey, the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second is probably Fred Hoiberg. So
the mayor. See, they've got good nicknames.
Yeah. So those are the best of 52. Now you could be the first team that gets a, you know, you could get the Isaiah Thomas is the best 60 of all time, and before him there were no good 60. Whatever, Manu was the first good 58 of all time,
yeah,
or whatever he was.
I think it's 57, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe we get the best 52 of all time, but the Tim Frazier was not traded for 52. He was traded for the flexibility that it possibly provides.
That also brings me up to I heard a lot of people saying, the 52nd pick is garbage. You never get anything out of it. Tim Frazier's not garbage. Therefore, Pelicans lose this trade drastically. But you're right. He was for cap flexibility. That's the major thing they were going for. But here's the other reality. You put yourself in the situation of any other team in the league, and the Pelicans call up and say, we're looking to trade Tim Frazier for nothing. And you're laying your plans for this offseason. Do you want Tim Frazier at $2 million taking up part of your roster right now? This moment? When you're about to start your offseason? Or would you consider trading for him after you've filled in all the positions with which cap space you have, with what mid-level exceptions you have, and then go back to the Pelicans? Because for $2 million, you could just trade a veteran minimum deal person to the Pelicans for him. So you would make that, like, you would offer something better later in the summer after all of the cap space has been moved up. But the Pelicans need to make this move now. They can't wait until that happens. So the people who are saying he didn't get very much for him, well, there probably wasn't much on offer because nobody wants to tie up any space right now. This is the time where you need as much space as you can. And that's why you have to look for teams like Washington, which are so far over the cap, there's no way in hell they're getting any space at all. So that's a lot to talk about Tim Frazier.
Well, that was perfectly said. So I mean, you can't risk that if Drew Holiday is going to leave or whatever you need to create more cap space, you can't risk that on July 2nd you're looking around the league asking somebody to take them and nobody says yes. And then, yeah, then you stretch them and it's only a couple $100,000 and yada, yada. But if you could get rid of them now, like, I'm trying to think of what the worst case scenario is. The worst case scenario is that you get to the end of the summer and – you know, you got to pick up one of these minimum point guard. But think about the point guards that are usually available for the minimum at the end of the summer. Like, they're all as good as Tim Frazier, if not better. And again, this staff likes Quinn Cook better than it likes Frazier anyway. So we're not talking about trading our backup point guard. We're talking about trading our third string point guard. So I guess, you know, to me, it was just a no-brainer. I was more surprised that Washington was, you know, giving up any kind of flexibility, whether it was some kind of trade extension or something like that for Tim Frazier. I just don't get it. But
so the Warriors just traded to get their hands on Jordan Bell. What don't I know about Jordan Bell that makes that make sense?
I mean, he was one of my guys that I loved in my article, and it's funny, all these guys are going between 31 and 39. But Jordan Bell is, I would say, Diallo with probably better perimeter defense. So, Golden State does it again, does another smart thing. So, good for them. They needed more help.
They're light years ahead.
Light.
Yeah, I love the jokes that were going around because the cap got knocked back $2 million. That not only did they get to take advantage of the highest cap spice, but this highest cap spike, but then they swept the playoffs, which reduced the total amount of money available for the salary cap the next year so that nobody else would have enough room to compete with them. Light years ahead, man.
They're always thinking.
I'm sure that was the number one reason they went out and got Durant. So, Chicago. We have to talk about Chicago. Seriously, that's all? Like, and in what world does the frickin' Chicago Bulls receive that call from Minnesota, have Minnesota say, oh, and you got to throw in the 16th pick, and them say, that's great, sure, have our 16th pick. Like, you're giving away Jimmy frickin' Butler. How do you give away Jimmy Butler for LaVine and Dunn and their 7th pick, which is Lauri Markkanen, of all people, and then decide you're going to throw in 16? Like, the Wolves should be having 2 first-round picks in that. Like, did no one pay attention to what Kevin Love got? Jimmy Butler's a better player than Kevin Love?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those situations where, as a team, maybe you see the offers declining. Because, I mean, I don't care what Boston or what Indiana or Chicago says. I guarantee they got offered at least one Nets pick from Boston and much more. And now all of a sudden, I guarantee the offers are much less. And so you kind of have two paths. You go, well, okay, I'm not going to accept. I could have had it better. I'm not good with sunk cost. Or you could say, what if these offers keep going down and you just panic trade? And I mean, Chicago loved Chris Dunn last year. And I would say that stay true to your evaluation. If you love a guy, a lot, I mean, you and I both liked Chris Dunn. A lot of people like Chris Dunn. All of a sudden, because of 1 year in the NBA and maybe the position that's hardest to, you know, to transfer your skills to, and you're behind a guy, a veteran like Rubio, now all of a sudden he's not great his rookie year. We're supposed to devalue them. So, I mean, you're looking at a top five pick from last year, a top seven pick this year, and then I guess it would all depend on what your evaluation is of LaVine is. Yeah. I think he's a guy who puts up bad or good stats on a bad team, but maybe others see something different. I just saw a Minnesota team that got so much better when he got off the court, but to Hoiberg, maybe he sees open court, wants to run, you know, now kick Dwayne Wade out of there, and he's starting to build a team that resembles a, you know, a little bit more like his Iowa State team did.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Zach LaVine has actually got the potential to be a pretty gifted shooting guard. I could easily see him being the Jason Richardson of this decade, you know, a shooting guard who, you know, pushes 20 points per game every single season, can dunk like crazy and hit the three at a pretty nice rate, but doesn't know what defense looks like even slightly and has no interest in trying at it until so late in his career that it doesn't really matter anymore. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Did you see who went 40th overall with the pick that we would have had?
No, I haven't seen that update yet.
Dwayne Bacon. A guy I absolutely hated. So if it's Dwayne Bacon in cash for Frank Jackson, I'm very happy.
Yeah, but still, who's on your board left, though, right now?
Right now, I think my number one would be, well, Nigel Williams-Goss, obviously, from Gonzaga, but he might be there at 52, and then Dwayne Dotson, and I think all my other guys are gone. So, yeah, those would have been the two guys I would have been going between, but honestly, both could be the pick at 52. We shall see.
Sterling Brown's still there.
Yeah, I don't think he will be, but he's another guy that I wouldn't mind at 52. But again, I want to caution us, whoever it is, and I know it's a deep draft, and we'll probably talk ourselves into whoever, the best 52 of all time by a long shot is Rasul Butler, and he didn't even get good for a couple of years. So I would slow your roll on whoever this pick is.
Well, if he's anything like, you know, Hornets second-round gem Adam Hawuska, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember Adam Hawuska?
Oh, from, well, I don't remember if he was from Iowa or Iowa State, but yeah, I could picture him clear as day.
I still remember the worst pick of all, like, and, you know, early on, I actually didn't love the draft the way I do now, but I still remember the worst pick when I was watching Hornets, and they were picking, I think it was 16, and they picked that Kirk whatever. God, what was his last name? And the only
Kirk Haston? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Kirk Haston. Yeah. And the only footage that they could pull out of the locker to show about that guy.
A little hook shot in the lane, baby.
It was a little hook shot in the lane, and then him taking like four completely uncontested jumpers that bounced around the rim a whole lot before they finally fell through. And I'm like, what is that? They're like, who thought that was a good idea?
Oh, man. I gotta see now. What do you remember? What year that was?
I gotta
find out because I want to see.
Probably
who was
be like 2001, wouldn't it?
I gotta see who else was still on the board and see who I wanted that year. But yeah, that was. I remember that one. I'm like, oh, and then I remember it was sold as well. I think I want to say I would almost bet that was the year that the NBA, the three-point line was taken back or for something, because I remembered all this logic about, well, the post game is going to be even more important because there's going to be more space or something. I remember that being the logic and them trying to sell us on his little hook shot being a weapon. But, yeah, three picks later is Zach Randolph.
Yeah.
the Charlotte Hornets at the time, they're looking for a power forward, and they got Kirk Haston and Zach Randolph, who was just a beast at Michigan State, even though he played 1 year, on the board, and they're like, yeah, I'll take the slow white guy with little to no skill.
And you got to give it up to me. It was 2001. I nailed it.
It was, yeah. And then you keep looking at that. Gerald Wallace goes 25. D'Alembert had a good career, 26. Jamal Tinsley, 27. And a little guy named Tony Parker at 28.
Yeah.
Gilbert Arenas at 31.
Even Trenton Hassel had like a good 3-year run as a defensive stopper in Chicago. Like, there's some good people there.
Yeah,
Brian Scalabrine.
You know it. I think in that draft, okay, I do remember, and this is funny because I'm making fun of slow white guys, but the guy I wanted to drop to us was Troy Murphy, who went two picks earlier.
The original stretch four.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a beast, but yeah, that was the Kwame Brown, Tyson Chandler, Pau Gasol draft. So I'm gonna
tell you something. That was back when I was playing Yahoo League fantasy basketball, and I won 1 year. Every other year, I was always near the bottom of my league. I won 1 year, and it was because I picked up Dirk Nowitzki in his second season, and he exploded. And I had Troy Murphy, and he had like a 13-13 or something like that in that season, and combined them with Kevin Garnett's best, like his peak season, and I just rolled. So Troy Murphy, I got a little spot in my heart for you, man.
Oh, he was a beast at Notre Dame. I mean, he had a couple good years, but yeah, I definitely I was waiting on him, and then I remember that Kirk Haston footage, but I don't even know how we got on this topic. But the point of the matter is that we got another pick coming up at 52. I don't think we should expect much, if anything, from it. I'm just curious to see all the Frank Jackson stuff coming in, as you would expect. Most people don't like it. Some people are trying to talk themselves into it. Like I said, to me, at this point, you're not talking about guys who are surefire going to make it or not. You are looking at guys who are going to make it dependent on the position they're put into and how much those teams invest in them. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes. He definitely has the skill set and he has the size, but it's going to be years as a project. And again, they know that and they're taking him as such.
All right, you got to make your prediction. Who are they taking at 52?
Oh, come on. Let's at least wait till they get to 50.
No, you got to make a prediction. That can't possibly go right because there are going to be a bunch of people selections before then.
Well, right. I guess I was on the board. I mean, I've always thought, at 40 they were going to take Dylan Brooks, but is he gone? I haven't even...
No, he's still available.
You sure? Or it was the other guy who from Oregon who went, right?
Yeah.
So I always thought Dylan Brooks would be the pick. So,
Tyler Dorsey was just picked by, the Hawks, and they just grabbed Thomas Bryant of Indiana. So we're getting there. Only 10 more picks to go. So your boy has the last 10 more picks, and I don't see the Spurs or the Warriors picking in that set. So you should be okay.
All right, yeah. No, I mean, the guy that interests me the most is Dwayne Dotson, and it's because I think if it wasn't for some very questionable off-court stuff, he's a surefire first-rounder, and he fits a lot of what we're talking about with the Pel. I mean, he's maybe the best volume three-point shooter, could play the two and three on the wings, has some length, but... You know, when he was at Oregon, there was a rape allegation against him. Never came to, you know, prosecution. The attorney's office decided not to prosecute anything, didn't have enough evidence. He kind of left, went to Houston. It's a tough day. I can't get any kind of, you know, morality here, or I have no opinion on it. I mean, I I do have opinions on it, but none of them are right. I don't know what happened in it, but it's just an interesting situation because if you think about it, whatever, if two guys go up to the podium, you know, Frank Jackson will be the guy who's discussed and gets the majority of the questions and the one that is kind of the Pelicans pick and the other guy's just the other guy. Does that give them a chance to kind of take Dotson and push that story under the rug or at least not expose it as much as if they just had one pick and he was the only guy fielding the questions? Yeah, that's something that I would be curious at. He would be the most intriguing guy to me that could come up at 52. Okay. Do you have anybody? And I know you studied a lot and had some guys you really like. Is there anybody still on the board that you are really intrigued by?
So Sterling and Sundarius are still there. Those are my two guys after Derek White and what's his name? Reed.
Okay.
So I guess, yeah. Reed is still there too, isn't he?
No, he was taken in like 32 or 33.
Oh, yeah. Miami picked him up. So
yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there pretty soon. This is most of these guys coming off, I just kind of look at their stats in college, and I'm like, if that's the best you can do in college.
I'm just surprised we haven't seen more of the foreign stashes. I really thought the way the second round will go, and maybe it still will, is I thought we would see a lot of foreign stashes picked, and then teams would use the third round, I'll call it. But
right.
I think undrafted free agency is going to be way crazier this year. But I thought teams would use that to essentially take guys and put them on two-way contracts or do things with them and kind of get the best of both worlds. So I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet. But I'll be curious with 52. There are some international guys still on the board. I'd be curious if the Pelicans do a stash. But like I said, I was told that they wanted to walk away from today with with one guy for now and one guy for the future. Not many more fit that. I guess, a Brooks, a Thornwell might be able to play right away.
Yeah.
If they really want to try to have a backup point guard who could play right away, a Monte Morris. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with this pick.
And, you were talking about foreign guys, and, of course, somebody picks Isaiah Hartenstein from Germany, or Hartenstein, or... Does that sound good, Hartenstein?
Yeah, it's got to be if it's from Germany. So while we're waiting on this, I'm kind of curious because, I touched on it a little bit before and just want to see what you think. But, the Pelicans, at the time, and maybe we still think so, really barely gave up anything for Boogie, at least not what we think a superstar should get. They gave up Buddy Hield 10, and then I think it wound up being like pick 34, essentially. So it wasn't much at the time, but now over these last couple of days, we've seen centers who aren't Boogie, but are quality centers. And that's what AD wanted. He wanted a big who could play next to him, so he didn't have to play center, basically giving away or costing, 10%. Oh, there goes Damian Dotson to the Knicks. So they're going to be on the board for the Pelicans, But guys who give you 70-80% the production, but maybe are costing 10 or 20% what Boogie cost, could you make an argument that maybe the better path would have been, again, if they weren't going to trade AD anyway, you wait a couple of months, you get a Valanciunas or a Dwight or somebody like that for pennies on the dollar, and you still get to keep Buddy, and maybe even your 20 or your 10th pick this year or whatever it would have been.
So really, you're probably going to be picking up somebody like Valanciunas. Let's just say that's the one. Valanciunas, you probably could have picked Malik Monk. I guess if you have Buddy, you don't pick Malik Monk. But you're looking at someone like Zach Collins, Malik Monk, Kennard, Mitchell. I think actually Mitchell would probably be, well, he's also kind of a, I don't know. Anyways, that's the kind of talent pool we're looking at. No. And and this is a league where stars rule all. Your top three guys will give you most of your wins in production. They're going to be the guys who carry you anywhere in the league, anywhere in the playoffs. And if you take DeMarcus Cousins is, especially if he's fit and skinny and playing with his head screwed on with a point to prove in a contract year, all these things are lining up to have a pretty nice looking season, in my opinion. That guy is way better than all three of those guys combined. He'll have much more of an impact because it's coming from one position, and then you just have a little bit of stacking on the side. And he's that kind of player. So you give up whatever you need to get him. Now, if he's Fat Boogie, he's probably not quite that good. But I feel like we got our honeymoon year coming up here, which is what I always talked about with Cousins, was we're going to have a year of a honeymoon Cousins and then worry about what happens with him after that. And in this case, after that and he gets paid, then we'll see how Cousins works out after that. But you disagree?
I mean, if Boogie resigns, I guess not. The one that the one that has me curious is, again, I think I always thought Valanciunas would be a good fit with AD, and we don't know for a fact. I mean, it hasn't happened, but it sounds like Toronto would be more than happy to kind of give him away. So, you know, with that in mind, you just wonder, would you rather have Boogie or Buddy Hield, Valanciunas, let's say... You keep the pick. Who would they have liked? They might have liked, let's say, Donovan Mitchell. And I guess you give up 34 and some other things for Valanciunas, maybe a future lotto protected first. Which would you rather have? I think you can make the argument either way. I think if Boogie resigns, it all works out with AD and whatever, then the Boogie route was the right way to go. But it just seems to me that you could get a center, a quality center for nothing. And Brooke Lopez is another one. I know they had to give up Russell, but that was only to offset Mozgov. I'm just saying these centers, quality ones, keep getting given away for 10, 20 cents. And yeah, we only paid 70 cents on the dollar for Boogie. We still gave up two top 10 picks, essentially. You could probably get DeAndre Jordan for one top 10 pick. So would you rather have Buddy Hield and DeAndre Jordan or DeMarcus Cousins? I think it's at least somewhat debatable and interesting to consider in retrospect.
Yeah. I'm still of the opinion that if you can get talent, that's one of the top spots at the position. And also, I'm still a little higher than you are. I know you were really, really wanting Boogie to get his butt into the paint a lot more than he was showing last year. But my whole take on that is still, we're in the modern NBA. We need people to stretch the floor and stand on the outside a lot as well. And he can do that for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's see. Dylan Brooks is now off the board. I don't care about Dylan Brooks. Do you care about Dylan Brooks?
No, Brooks and Dotson are both gone.
You basically have Williams Goss left over from your original list, right? That's it?
Yeah, and that's a pure point. I mean, it'd be interesting if they take him. I think there's some interesting guys. You know, Nigel Hayes was a guy 2 years ago that I thought the Pelicans would target after his junior, well, before his junior year, but I thought in the next year's draft he would be an interesting prospect. I mean, he was a guy.
And there with Sterling.
He was a guy, yeah, they're all going to go off the board now. But Nigel Hayes was a guy who, when he was a role player, was somebody that looked like a first-round pick, and then as he became the main guy at Wisconsin, became much more inefficient and now might not even get drafted. But really, you're drafting a guy there to be a role player, so you know, that might be something to look at. There's a couple of other guys. Andrew White is a knockdown shooter, but he's 24 years old and he went to Syracuse, so you got to question his defense. So, I mean, there's guys to take a shot on, but like I've said over and over again, it's just a situation where you should not expect anything from the 52nd pick.
Yeah, all my guys are gone. Ike Anagbogu. Is that how you say that name?
You nailed it.
Hey, he was supposed to go a lot higher, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said it in the podcast. Guys who have gone anywhere between 30 and, you know, 60. Like, they could literally go anywhere. So
right.
It's just about where somebody ends up taking them. So, yeah, Indiana's giving him a shot, but I don't know how much he's going to play on that team.
So do you think – I want to get your take on this, because I know you know Phil Jackson personally and you hang out with him a lot. So you probably have, like, a, you know, laser intensity knowing exactly what's in his brain. Do you think he was actually seriously taking offers on Porzingis, or do you think this was him showing Porzingis his power? Because – Phil Jackson has always been a dick. If you go, I lived right outside of Chicago for a lot of the Michael Jordan years. I paid a lot of attention when the Lakers were so good and making teams like Sacramento and Portland, who I liked a lot, lose. There are a number of stories of Phil Jackson flexing his power and being an absolute dick. And this feels like that to me. Him just letting Porzingis know, I could trade you if I wanted to.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the only person who's not on the Porzingis is God bent. Like, I think he's a good player.
There went Thornwell, by the way. Yeah, my other guy.
Good, I'm glad.
I got nothing left, man.
I think I'm the last guy on the... I mean, I think Porzingis is very good. I don't think he'll ever be a number one guy on a good team. Like, I would, if I'm just doing a franchise in today's NBA, I would take Devin Booker over Porzingis. Porzingis is obviously the better player, but come on. I mean, it's a guards league. So if he could have got Booker in number four, that would have been a steal. Even if it was just a swap, Booker and four for Porzingis and eight, I don't know. I'm just not a guy who thinks that Porzingis is like this franchise changer. I think it's because he's in New York. I think he's a different looking, different acting type of guy. He's gotten media attention, but
yeah,
I don't think he's this franchise alter. I mean, I would take Fultz over him. I'm not a big Ball fan, but, there's plenty of guys that I would trade Porzingis for. If I were Phil, I don't think he has to be crazy to do it.
Yeah. So, like, I don't watch enough New York Knicks basketball, and I don't know, other than New York Knicks fans, why anybody would. But I don't know enough, the whole argument that you have there, which is it's the guards league, I think that's 100% true when we're talking offensive basketball. When you're talking defensive basketball, I don't buy that at all. But I haven't seen Porzingis' defense enough to know. I know he could block some shots and they get super excited about that. But that's like, as far as defense goes, that's like item number six you want to check for a big man. They need to do so many other things well that, you know, blocking shots... We watched a Hornets team do a lot of really great things, and they were a defensive team with Tyson Chandler, and that was when Tyson Chandler averaged one block a game. So blocks aren't everything. In fact, they're usually not anything. So it's I don't know enough about Porzingis' defense to be able to say anything. If he's actually a top-tier defensive player, then I probably would rate him higher than someone like Booker. But if he's not that, then, yeah, I would go Booker every time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's nuts, I guess. He's not nuts for that. He's nuts for making it public, but it's nice when you have, 9, 10, 11 championships and you give zero, you know what. I like to see guys who are just like that and basically just say what they think and what's on their mind. So whatever. We're getting closer and closer to the pick. I know it's kind of anticlimactic. We were planning on having a little bit of a stretch leading up to the first one, and that happened all of a sudden. I guess I'll just say,
Hey, the Clippers went and got Thornwell so that he could not play at all for Doc Rivers.
Well, they got him. They also got a point guard earlier. I forget which one. It was one of the ones I liked, but they got themselves a point guard, so maybe that means they're ready to lose Chris Paul and move on also. But I guess the other thing I want to talk about tonight is I think, you know, if you're being optimistic, or maybe if you don't want to be optimistic and keep Drew, if you're really thinking about it, a lot of things broke right for the Pelicans if they want to keep Drew. I mean, Minnesota took on a big salary in Jimmy Butler. New York and Dallas both took point guards in the top 10. I mean, first of all, Philly traded up, got Fultz. The Brooklyn Nets went and got D'Angelo Russell. So, I mean, again, I'm still going to make you do the rap, even if you take it back. But you look around, and yes, a lot of teams could use Drew, and they wouldn't say no to him if he came for free or cheap. But you look around at these teams now, do you still see this massive or any market at all for Drew Holiday?
It's a lot harder to spot one. I'm not going to lie. Like, there's still a few teams that I think might do it, but then when you take a look at the point guards that are available out there, it's going to have to take a GM who really, really wants to focus on the defensive side of the ball to make that kind of offer for Drew. And most of the teams that are, like, Pacers is the only one, and Pacers are not going to be thinking about signing Drew to any sort of long-term contract when they don't know what the hell they're doing with Paul George. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard for me to see it too. To me, it's just how desperately does Drew want to get out? I would say the biggest contenders will be Denver and Dallas maybe, but again, I think they would want him. I just can't see them getting rid of all their non-guaranteed players and trading this and bending over backwards for Drew Holiday, but we'll see. We're here. We're 50 picks are in the book. We're almost there.
The Denver Nuggets just took a guy whose name is, and this is what I think it is, Vlatko Kankar.
Yeah, but what team?
That sounds like a horrible disease.
What team
it does
he play for?
What team did he play? He's from Slovenia. I don't know what
he played for. Mega B-Max. I'll just go on the road. My guess is going to be LJ Peak. I have no idea, obviously, but that's just that's the guess I'm taking either. The one that really interests me, though, is...
Or are they going to sell it?
I don't know if there's any buyers out there. But the one that really interests me is Jonathan Jean, or John, however you pronounce it, 7'2" guy. Would have easily been a mid first round pick, maybe early 20s, but wound up being diagnosed with the disease that Isaac.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Isaac Austin. I don't remember his name.
Ike Austin, right, from Baylor.
Yeah, I think Ike Austin was the player years ago, but whatever. The real interesting thing to me is, like, the guy might play, might not play. But at 52, would you just take a shot, use a pick, and then, you know, see if he'll ever play again? Because, I mean, like I said, the high odds are whoever you pick here, they are never going to be an NBA contributor. But if this guy winds up being able to play in the NBA, you know, he's a guy that would have been a first-round pick. So would you consider that at least?
Yeah, I'd consider it. I don't think I would actually do it. Like, that seems like a... Although, there apparently now it's starting to become more of a run on foreign guys, so maybe we should just be part of the gang.
Yeah.
Because Matthias Lazort, although he's French, so is that Lazor?
Yeah, this is exactly what I thought would happen, just because, again, I think a lot... I think there's going to be aggressiveness with undrafted guys. I think you're going to see teams being more aggressive than ever. I wouldn't be surprised by a guy like George DePaula. He's a international guy that, you know, he can't really shoot, but he fits a lot of the other things of being able to guard multiple position that the Pelicans want. So I think that it's just going to be hard to find a guy who even has a chance of making the rotation. So maybe you go 2 for 2 and try to take another project guy who's a couple years away, but whatever. I just think that would be interesting if you went after him and, you know, maybe there's only a 25% chance he ever plays in the NBA, but if he does, there's a 50% chance that he'll be a successful player, and that's better odds than you're getting on anybody else you take right now.
Yeah, and the one guy that I was still a little bit interested in, the one guy left, just went off the board, Monte Morris. He's going to be taken by Denver.
Yeah, again, I didn't think Monte Morris was ever a guy that they would consider, because remember, what they want is guys who could defend multiple positions. So
yeah, he's small, yeah.
So there it is, as expected. Indiana is buying the pick from New Orleans. Not a surprise at all.
And taking someone named Edmund Sumner.
Yeah, I mean, he's a quality guard prospect from Xavier.
I'm sorry, I hadn't heard of him, and it sounds like some sort of British guy who'll be drinking some tea. Edmund Plapacity. I'm making fun of people's names now. I need to stop. Okay. All right, so the Pelicans made a move right at the very beginning of the second round, and we could have just told you what it was there, given our thoughts on it, and called it a night. But no, we stayed on the whole time just for you guys.
Yeah, no, I'm actually surprised somebody bought it, you know, but it makes sense. The Pelicans traded some cash to move up. They got some back, so at the end of the day, you know, like I said, the Tim Frazier move was never about the 52nd pick. It was about getting flexibility, and then there's probably a million-dollar difference, or maybe a little less. Maybe it's the exact same number, but essentially they found a creative way to trade 40 and 52 for 31. They, yep, you know, just did it with cash, so... makes sense.
All right, so what draft grade do you give? Because you have to do a draft grade whenever you talk about the draft. Immediately afterwards, you have to grade it because you know exactly what's going to happen with all these players. So what grade are you giving the Pelicans for their inspired selection of Frank Jackson at 31?
I mean, I would give it a C+. I think it has a higher ceiling. I guess the reason why I'm not as excited about it is because I don't think this regime is here when Jackson has a chance to start entering, you know, where physically and mentally he's getting to a point where he could be a contributing NBA player. And at that point, the coaches and roster, you know, roster will have been shaken up so much, and a new GM will be here and not be attached to Jackson, to the point where he'll never be utilized the way he was intended. So that's why. If you could tell me that maybe AD and Cousins turn it around, Cousins resigns, Chris Fitch and Gentry are here for the next couple of years, then, you know, it would make sense to me. But, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. So I would give it a C+. How about you?
So first off, I have to say, I asked you for a draft grade, not a pessimistic take on the entire Pelicans organization, the fact that everyone's going to be fired soon. So I'm really disappointed in you, man. honestly, I would give them a D because this player's not really going to do anything for the Pelicans and not going to do anything for them for the next few years. So we got nothing out of this draft. How's that for pessimistic?
I would think the best thing that came out of this draft, at least in the short term, was getting Tim Frazier up the books, honestly.
Man, you don't have to like kill him like that, man.
Well, I'm not killing him. I'm just
he had a triple double.
Yeah,
and Anthony Davis called him afterwards, Mr. Triple Double.
Yeah, I honestly think that's the best thing that happened in the last 48 hours is they just gave themselves the flexibility and leverage to get under the cap and wine and dine other point guards so Drew can't just absolutely play them and hold all the leverage. I would say that is their best move of the last 48 hours, but the Jackson one has some upside if this coaching staff stays together and they see it through. I just don't think that that's going to happen. So I totally get it. If you're Dell Demps, you've got to make a pick for today as if you're going to be here for the next 5 years. But him and that staff will not be. So that's why I would grade it a C+.
Yeah. I will also point out, because I think this is really funny, the 31st pick of this draft, which the Pelicans acquired to get Frank Jackson, came to New Orleans from Atlanta, who got it from Brooklyn, who got it from Charlotte. It's like, these second round picks get traded all the freaking time. Everybody knows they're worthless. Which is why I always find it funny when I listen to like those national pundits who are talking about trades, and they're like, well, I would trade this person for at least a second round pick. I'm like, yeah, so you're going to trade it for a bag of chips. Like, whatever.
Yep. I mean, whatever. It's good to dream. I have heard and been told many times that a big part of being a sports fan is dreaming and hoping. And I mean, I just don't know how you continue to do it every year. Like people getting so mad that they sold the pick that wound up being Brandon Dawson. And oh my God, I can't believe we gave up on him. And then he scores 8 points in a summer league game. And we're like, ugh. I knew it. He's going to be great. And he turns into another, and like every year people freak out about the same. That's the thing that confuses me the most is how history basically repeats itself every year. But yet people go, yeah, but what about Isaiah Thomas? And they talk about the aberrations when I could tell you that basically picks 45 through 60 almost every year are absolute garbage. You'll go out and find the one or two outliers as if that's a quality argument. That's just the thing that confuses me about fandom, but it is what it is.
Okay, so I guess our next podcast will be talking what's going to happen with the free agency and what would we like to have happen. We've been talking about it for a little while, but I think we need to do a more formal pod. I will say that for all of you who love our podcasts, we'll be able to cover the first part of free agency, and we'll probably have several podcasts during it. But on July 7th, I fly to India. So Mike is going to have to find some other partner to talk to about free agency, or you guys might have to wait a little bit before I can come back.
I'll give an open invitation to Fletcher Mackle if he wants to be my co-host.
After the way you were killing him on Twitter, I don't know how excited he'd be.
It's to redeem himself and show how much smarter than me he is. So Fletcher, listening, which I know you are because you like to steal our ideas, feel free to be my co-host for that.
wait. You just basically insulted everything he does, and then you're like, he steals all our ideas. Didn't you just insult us?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's very true. By 6 degrees of macellation, I insulted us. But no, I open invitation if he wants to come on. We'll do a podcast together. Should be fun.
All right. So thanks everybody for listening to In the Know, and you can come back for the Fletcher McNamara podcast.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.